Yo.
What's the date? 19 May, A.D. 14, St. Hill Special Briefing Course. The reason why everybody showed up here so fast actually has to do only with one fact, as I haven't lectured here for a couple of weeks, you see. Now, you're... I don't know why we can call this lecture today. Actually, I should be up there working on the verification of your materials and so forth, which are all pretty well in hand. I think if you were going into the materials which I'm working on at the present moment, it would probably be a different story. But the object is not to get you wrapped up, but to wrap up the material, so I'm doing it. I haven't really anything to talk to you about today at all, but... I think that you probably know all there is to know about auditing. You probably have no difficulties with auditing. You probably have no difficulties with the material at all. And everything is smoothed out. And you got all that taped. Now I think we probably ought to take up the pre-clear. And getting a win on the pre-clear, applying the information to a pre-clear. I think that might be germane to the situation. The situation is pinpointed by the fact that I've forgotten the exact number. I think I had 25 provisional class sixes issued. Here, what was the 24? Last week, and I think that you all ought to be applauded for getting through to where you did. The only comment I'd like to make on that is I never saw such vicious grading in my life. I just never saw such vicious grading in my life. You had some of your papers on your fellow students down to around 60 when the grade was 80 plus, and on one noteworthy example, it was down around 60 when the actual grade was 90. Fantastic. Fantastic. So, but on a classification examination, I'm not about to stand there idly twiddling my thumbs. And, of course, I graded all the papers afterwards personally. It took me about 6 hours, by the way, going through every question and so forth, because all I wanted to know was just, is this auditor competent, and does he know his material, you see? And... even so, I didn't have to stretch any points to amount to anything. But those grades were just cut to ribbons. I never saw the like of it, and so forth. And I said to myself, well, I hope this isn't a symptom of what will happen to the pre-clear. Pretty ghastly. Anyhow, you all did quite amazingly well. Your grades were right up there with the St. Hill co-audit course grades on the final exam, and your examination was tougher, if anything, than that. So I'm quite happy with that now. Now, how auditing can occur? Is probably... the greatest mystery to the person who makes it work the least. You've got a mysterious mysteriousness on any auditor who is having an awful hard time making anybody recover from something. He's got a mystery. And he may not know he has this mystery. He may not know he has this mystery, but he really doesn't know why auditing works, or if it does work. And he has assigned some value to the subject of auditing, which is different and extraneous to the actual value of auditing. So therefore, he makes enough goofs in trying to handle auditing that auditing doesn't work. It's as simple as this, you see. And he always looks for something more mysterious than is. He looks for something more complicated than is. And you, whenever you have a student that just can't seem to get any kind of result whatsoever, one-third of the time, his trouble will resolve if you simply ask him why auditing doesn't work and why it does work, and get him into a big discussion about this thing. Now, you will have relieved then the impediment which is preventing him from perceiving. He will have been impeded from perceiving why auditing works. So a person who can't understand why auditing works has got a barricade across the line of his understanding, which is a presumption that it doesn't work. You see, he's not about to understand why it works, because he already understands that it doesn't work. On some reactive basis, you see, he knows it doesn't work. So now you're going to ask him to try to understand why it does work. And, of course, he'll hit this other one, and he never will grasp it. You see, he's blocked himself out from comprehension of it. So, therefore, a discussion of this simple basic to you as an instructor of auditors is like diamonds, like diamonds. It'll cut through most of your more difficult students and so on. The way to use this little gimmick is you see somebody is having a terrible time with his comm cycle. Now, anybody has a little bit of trouble with a comm cycle. You take a PC, he's all rattled, and he's upset, and he's this, and he's that, and the other thing, and he's in the middle of the bank, and so on, and his comm cycle response, you see, is so rough, quite ordinarily, that it takes a good expert to even find out, you know, which way it's going or what it's doing. You have to be an expert just to get by, see, as an auditor. All right, so the PC, you see, he's already all rattle-pated out on the subject of his comm cycle, you see. You ask him one question, he gets an answer to something else, you see. And your effort to steer him through this without ARC breaking him and so forth, as I said, that is an expert action. An expert action. Because that is rugged. It's never quite by pattern from the PC's viewpoint. And, of course, that's as it should be. So the auditor who understands this aspect of it, he doesn't have very much trouble with anything but the PC. Now, supposing he has trouble with understanding what the comm cycle is, understanding why auditing works, and this is added to the difficulty the PC is going to introduce into it. Of course, at this moment, we get an unmanageable session. We get no improvement. We get no case gain. We get nothing, you see. Why? The auditor is already incapable because of his own barricade across the line of understanding why auditing works, because something is telling him that it doesn't work, or there's some reason why it shouldn't work, you see, something like this. So that's already got him stopped. So therefore, he doesn't understand that it should work. Now, let's put that mess on the line. Then let's get the routine difficulty that a PC introduces into the line. You see, PC gets all waddle gabopped, you see. He sounds like ions going around inside of his skull, you know. He's banging from hither to hence, and you ask him, do fish swim? And he gets, do they fly? And you know, that's why he's being audited, you see, because he's got stuff to walk through. Well, that introduces the problem into the thing. And by the time you get the combination of all these factors, why, you get no gain. So, as I repeat, you have to be an expert to handle the PC's comm cycle. Anyway, and therefore you have to take out a line as an auditing instructor, an auditor's instructor, you have to take out a line those things which make it too difficult to do. And chief amongst those is, does auditing work, or why doesn't auditing work? And a discussion of this particular character is very, very, very heady in its payment. You'll be quite surprised. I'm not giving you a bum tip here. This is a hot one as far as study is concerned. All right, now you take this fellow. I'll show you how he's spotting. See, he's sitting there, and he says to... now, have you ever been up, or whatever repetitive process he's running, you know, and the PC says, thank you, good, thank you. Have you ever been up, and the PC says, thank you, good. You say, what the hell's going on here? There's no comm cycle here. What's going on, see? Or you'll get, there's so many variations of this that it'd be almost impossible to mimic them all. You get the auditor who says, how many is up, or something of the sort, and the PC says, well, actually, it's a matter of downness. I've always thought it was really a matter of downness and so forth. But when you really come down to think about it and so forth, when you really take how many is up, you count them off and so forth and so forth, and, but... I don't really understand that. It's how many is down that has really got the thing important to me, you see. That's what really I keep dwelling on. And the auditor says, thank you. Just as though something has happened, you see. And he asks the same question again. He gets another evasion. See? And he never really notices that the PC never has understood or agreed with the auditing question. The PC hadn't got a clue as to what's going to happen here. Well, PC isn't answering the auditing question. In other words, you can just keep adding these various flubs. You see any of them, and they all come under the category. The auditor isn't asking a question, getting it answered, and acknowledging when the PC has completed his answer. See? And you get any variation of that. Get any variation of that, then you've got an auditor who has got one over here. Of course, you show him how to do it. He said, oh, that's the way to do it. And he does it perfectly. You see, you don't need any more action than that. This guy can't seem to learn it. You straighten him all up on cutting the PC's responses. Now he asks one question in a 2.5-hour session and lets the PC chatter the rest of the time. See, you've got him broken to one thing, he goes into another thing. Now, my recommendation is not, as the auditor's instructor, not to go into despair, but to examine this one burning question. Why doesn't auditing work? Let's get it out into the clear. You all of a sudden will find some very interesting answers. You've got to be auditing on your toes to get these things and catch them as they go by. You know, you got to watch that tone arm. He says, well, something or other, and you get a wild blow down on the tone arm. I'll make a note over here to take that one up, too, see? And you all of a sudden will come out with some very, very interesting data. And it'll be very revelatory to him, too. And after that, he said, well, of course auditing works, you know? Now, you say, go back in there again with a comm cycle, and it's rat-a-tat-a-bang, and you won't have any trouble teaching the comm cycle. Got this as a side panel to auditing. Says nothing to do with taking care of the PC. This is the auditor taking care of the PC. Why do you have trouble with this? All right, that's under one heading then. This one heading. And that's why doesn't auditing work? Just put that in one big, wide, broad heading. You see somebody who's having too much trouble, can't ever get tone arm action this way and that way as an auditor. That's one thing you do with this fellow. There happen to be two more things, and that's the subject of this lecture. Now, in this type of interrogation, this looks very much like an auditing session, but it's not quite an auditing session.
It's not quite an auditing session, because you are looking for something that answers your question that only the auditing will tell you, not really the PC. You see, that's a little bit different. You're accumulating information so that you're steering the PC toward a cognition. And he eventually will round up the cognition. You don't preconceive the cognition, you understand, but you take tone arm blowdowns on everything he has told you, see? Every time he says, I'll just give you a ridiculous example. Every time he says it's adult, you see, and it's immaturity. Every time he says this, it's adult or something, you get a blowdown. You make a note of that, adult over here, see. And then he mentions this word immaturity, and he's still discussing why auditing doesn't work, you see, and you write down immaturity. You finally, what's this got to do with it, see? Well, he's finished telling you everything he's finished. Now let's find out, what does adult have to do with auditing not working, you see, and what does immaturity of it, so on. And he's got some kind of an idea that everybody is stuck at the age of four, that he got taught in a sociology class or something of the sort, so therefore they're not sufficiently mature to face up to the realities of existence, you see. He's got this all packed in sideways. All of a sudden he'll get the rest of the puzzle and drag it off. What these blowdowns are little flags that tells you there's dynamite buried here. And you take that up and you can completely change the auditing address and aspect of an auditor's auditing with such a discussion as an auditing instructor. So that's well worth knowing. But there are two other categories, so I won't say that will work with every one of these cases. And there may be two or three more categories, but I will give you as many as I know and am certain of. Now let's give you the next one, not because it's the next most important, but because it's an old one, and it comes under the heading of help. Now, unfortunately, you must not use failed help. You mustn't use failed anything. That's because of the line plot of actual goals. So let's just skip this idea of failed, don't you see? We'll just have to take up the subject of help. This is another ramification of what I've just been telling you, but it hits sometimes very close to home indeed. There is no GPM about help, so you can hit it as heavy as you want to. It's something above. I can give you data of this particular character now, because knowing what is the totality content of the reactive bank, you see, I know some things are slightly senior to the content or don't impinge on the content and therefore can be cared for independently, you see, without undue re-stimulation. And this, too, this just barely comes under the heading. Help just barely comes under the heading. Therefore, it's rather successful. It's rather successful. You may find help in an implant someplace, something, but it isn't going to wrap anybody around a telegraph pole. You can take up the subject of help, you see. You can take up the subject of who he's tried to help and who's tried to help him and who he's tried to help and any confounded thing you want to take up under this subject, and you're liable to get someplace with this auditor who really can't make auditing work. Well, there's no use trying, you get cognition like this, there's no use trying to help them because man only succeeds when he helps himself. He said, where the hell did I get that? You know, he stands back and he looks at this thing. And he suddenly conceives of dragging somebody out of the stone quarry, you see. He conceives of standing up on the bank of the stone quarry looking diffidently down into the stone quarry with the guy drowning down there, you see, and sheer walls, and thinking to himself, well, there's no reason to give him a hand or throw him a rope because he really doesn't deserve help unless he can help himself, you see. The poor sod down there hasn't got anything to hold on to, nothing to stand up in. Of course, this becomes ridiculous even to him, you see. But you'll find that these odd bit presumptions of some kind or another get wedged sideways in somebody's skull, and you couldn't begin to make a dictionary of the number of them you will find.
They're just innumerable. So you don't know quite what you're digging for, except you're digging for an impediment on the subject of help. Something is impeding his ability to help or be helped, and that's all you're digging for. So anything that you talk about help that he hits on that is a side light to help, that gives you a tone arm motion, you then make a note of to take up independently. And you will chase this whole thing all the way down to a proper cognition, and you will therefore take care of his attitude toward peakies and auditing, you see, and all of a sudden he will start using the comm cycle. You understand that? The whole basis of it is the comm cycle is too easy to use as long as the person's intention toward the PC is good and he's trying to assist the PC and so forth. So the things which make a person unable to use such a comm cycle are those things, of course, which make a person believe that he cannot assist or cannot or should not or that it's impossible to. See? You get where you enter this. See? There's where you enter it. See? Of course, all this works with PCs, too. This really works with PCs. This also applies to the PCs who get no tone arm action. PCs who get no tone arm action and so forth have got one of these buttons. Well, there's a dangling spring that goes out here about a yard, see? And the button is out here, you see, and all of the machinery down underneath where the spring should contact on this button and so on is all miswired and filled full of concrete. You're not about to get there without a special address to the situation. In other words, this person is sitting there saying, well, I can't be helped anyway. Actually, nobody could help anybody. If anybody did help anybody, then he would become responsible for the other person's life. And I don't want this other person to be responsible for my life, because that would be a bad thing to do to them. So therefore, if I sit here just sort of blank, why, therefore, I won't incur any liability. This is some reactive that's going on, see? And that's why the person isn't getting tone arm action, given good auditing. But we're taking it up, of course, here at St. Hill from the auditor's viewpoint. That's all good pre-clear material. Now, the other one, which I save until last, is a bit more esoteric. Now, there may be some more of these things. I wouldn't say there aren't, but I notice from a long lot of experience along the line, most of the PCs I've had much to do with have come under one or another of these three categories. Now, this other one is a real dog. This other one is a sneaky sneak that probably could furnish the material for a half a dozen lectures. I'll give it to you very rapidly. This is of great social importance, what I'm giving you. This is something to chitter-chatter about. Now, because it's so interesting, don't forget the other two. This is very interesting. And if I were giving this, a nice spring rain, in a broad sort of a way at a Congress or something like this, I could really embroider this thing up. I would call the beginning lecture Life Amongst the Lowly. People, especially Southerners, don't recognize that's the second title to Uncle Tom's Cabin. It's very amusing. You can ask a Southerner, have you ever read a book called Life Amongst the Lowly? Have you ever heard of this book? And they will swear no. You can bet them a couple of pounds, and they'll lose every time. Life Amongst the Lowly. Why is life amongst the lowly so lowly? I'll give it to you right where I caught it, on the entrance point. This was the entrance point to this examination. It's all right for some professor to sit in his ivory tower and ivory towerify and fill books full of what other professors in their ivory towers have ivory towerified. But there's no substitute for getting down and getting your paws dirty with life to know what it's all about. There's just no substitute for that. And I've rubbed elbows with an awful lot of people at various stratas and classes, sizes, shapes, and descriptions. And in rubbing elbows, one fact used to strike me as a wild bit that I never could quite reconcile.
there was this weird attitude which didn't fit with what they did to people. I'm not now saying there is such a thing as a lower clauses. I'm talking about people who are under tremendous duress. People who are being hammered and pounded by the economic mills and ground very fine indeed. People who are being hunted. Criminals on the run, don't you see? This type of person. People that they more or less had it, you know, from life. And those people in a group do one thing that is a common denominator to the group. It's always poor Dillinger. They shot him. It's always poor Bill. Poor Joe. There's always grief and super saccharine sympathy of some kind or another. It really isn't sentimentality. It's too gruesome. And I've listened to this. Oh, a group of guys sitting on a forecastle head, you know, and they're talking about poor old Bill, you know. The sharks got him, you know. And listen to this. And in life, they just knock each other's heads off, see? They're unthinkably mean to one another. But they're so super saccharine, weird aspect. This, and it always just kind of went clink, clink. It didn't make any sense, you see? They'd just as soon step on Dillinger's teeth and sell them at the local pawn shop, see? See, but it's poor Dillinger, you know? And it's poor you. And this poor you gave me a clue to something that is confoundedly well worth knowing and is very well could open up a whole field and make a real subject of sociology. Because it gives us the mechanism by which the lowly hold the lowly down, and which they do to one another constantly and continuously and instinctively. And it's just about as vicious as keeping a cobra in the cash drawer and then inviting somebody to rob it. It's a wild mechanism. Why is it a wild mechanism? I dare say you will occasionally hear this, or you have occasionally heard this. But really, you'd have to be on the seamier side of life than most of you are accustomed to run into it as a habit and a way of life. The slums, the places where people have zero opportunity, that sort of thing, there is where it is most prevalent. It's the poor you. You poor fellow. And now let's move it up into a little bit more workable technical platform. How you have been wronged. How he was wronged. How they were wronged. Now let's just move it into that technical platform. And we all of a sudden see that life amongst the lowly depends exclusively on their continued operation of just this one little gimmick, not on any other gimmick. We are looking now at the common denominator of sociology. What makes a slum a slum? Why can the fellow never get out of the slum? How come? What is this trap? Well, it's how you have been wronged, how they have been wronged, and so forth. And not to any great degree, except as an example, how I have been wronged. That is not its dominant chord. You will hear that in there as an example, but that isn't. That's just a response to the mechanism. That isn't the important point of the mechanism. In the early days of Dianetics, we ourselves had this. You see, how you have been wronged, see? And it is the most acceptable thing that you ever had anything to do with. People just lick this up left, right, and center. Well, what happened to it? Well, I worked it out along another line, entirely different line. If you can't take responsibility for your own actions, and if you can't recognize the cause of your difficulties, then you're in a trap, and you'll continue in that trap forevermore. And I became completely unwilling to hold people forever in a trap by any reason, even that of popularity, which, of course, everybody knows is the greatest god to worship there is. I'm thinking of Johnson's poverty programs now, and the fact that he's had five families sitting down on one of his farms in the most abject poverty that anybody had ever lived in. The Republicans went down and dug it up. It probably would contribute to finishing him, Johnson, off as a presidential candidate. The point is here, this war against poverty would have to include an understanding of why people in groups remain poor. This is the missing link, this piece of data I'm giving you right now. Quite valuable to the auditor, but very valuable sociologically. As I said, I could lecture on it for a very long time, and it's very interesting. But let's get down to what the truth of the matter is. An individual must accept his own responsibility and his own ability as cause before he can run off his overts. Simple. You can't have an overt if you can't recognize yourself as cause. You can't get out of a rat race unless you can recognize your overts. That's all there is to it, see? So how do you keep somebody in a rat race? Just never let him recognize his overts. And you say, poor you. Look at everything that has been done to you. And you have never done anything, you poor fellow. Look how you have been wronged. There you were, sitting there innocently, doing nothing. And up jumped the regiment and wiped you out. You poor fellow. Now, all you have to do is keep up a running fire of this stuff, and you effectively suppress and mask the fact that the individual himself is capable of causation. Let's just not worry about the overt act. You're telling this individual that he was incapable of cause, and you were pointing out moments, particularly when he was not at cause. And you were pointing out the fact that things just happen to him, and that he doesn't cause any of them, which brings him into a causeless thing, which throws him into the dwindling spiral and will hold him on the floor and on the bottom of the heap forever. And all you have to do is keep convincing him that he has been wronged and that he himself never wrongs anybody. That's all you have to do. You just keep that mechanism going, and then stay on the bottom of the pile forever. So Life Amongst the Lowly is a long song of how you have been wronged. You never had a chance. And when you get this tune played out to its bitterest end, you get a person who is bitterly finished, because he can never get off an overt act. Now, we have to go back into what is really, completely aside from the fact that this does occur in actual GPMs and so on, what really is obsessiveness? How does a person become obsessed with a problem? This is gold, man. This is solid gold to an auditor. How does a person become obsessed with a problem? How is he always dwelling on it, thinking on it? Why is he stuck in? How does he get stuck in this? See? Why is this is described 90% of your PCs, see? They walk in, and all they can think about is Madge left me, you see, and you bring it up and so forth, and they say, and you think you've gotten them out of it now, and you processed them down the line very beautifully, and all of a sudden Madge left me. You never can seem to get them off of that. You never can get the needle out of that groove, much less off the platter. They just go on. Days and days they spend worrying, worrying, thinking, thinking, going on and on about this thing, see? They can't get the needle changed, you see? They can't get the platter flipped. And you, the auditor, know instinctively that you've got to change that tune before you can have anybody in front of you who's paying any attention auditing. He's obsessed with the subject of. Well, that all went back. I guess that was in the days before Madge left me. He had it all taped. You never get tired of personnel like you get tired of one of these personnel in a PC's bank, you know. That was before the bank failure. Before the bank failure. No, that was after the bank failure. You know, the bank failed. Now, what pins them into it? And what can unpin them? And this becomes very vital information. What can unpin them off of this thing? There's several systems that can be used to unpin them. We won't go into all of the systems that can be used, but chief amongst them is the OW sequence. That is a prime mechanism that pins a person into obsessiveness. They never recognize their own overt in that sphere of existence. And not recognizing their own overt in that sphere of existence, they can never unpin themselves from it. Now, let me put it very crudely. Before you get your hand cut off in a buzzsaw, you've got to get yourself somehow in the vicinity of a buzzsaw, and you in some fashion or another have got to reach for that buzzsaw. It's actually impossible for you to get your hand cut off in a bandsaw unless somehow or another you have, by whatever concatenation, arranged that proximity. Now, somewhere back along the line, before the buzzsaw, the individual did something or committed something that walked him on that channel up to getting his hand cut off in the buzzsaw. He did something to arrive him there. That is very important, because he will never get out of there till you've tricked the something that actually did arrive him there. It's not good enough to have him inventing reasons. It's the guilt, you see, is the inversion of this. You keep inventing ideas, inventing overts. There's guys around who eventually have realized that they have to get off their overts, but they don't know what they are. They haven't got an auditor, so they'll invent overts to get off. You've got to beware of this bird, too, see? That's known as a guilt complex. 10,000 Japanese killed in landslide. This fellow was sitting in Birmingham at the time. He says, "How did I do it?" That's a guilt complex in operation. So it goes into an inversion, and the individual actually start dreaming up things he didn't do in order to get out of the obsession of thought. See? He'll eventually go that far. Well, he's spun by the time he goes there on that subject. But look here. What is this? What is this constant dwelling of the mind on this action that the auditor runs into continuously in processing PCs? It's very hard not to run into this. It's the overt act that he committed that kept him pinned into that line. And if you want to really find the overt act and monkey around with this nicely and gently by any overt act system that we have ever had, you all of a sudden will find what he really did do, and you've got to beware of the guilt complex of inventing things that he did do that he didn't do, because this is just another alter is, you see. You see, he can alter is this, as well as get off his actual overt. So therefore, you always have to verify one of these things when you're handling one of these things on making sure that he didn't give you any untruths. You've got to get your truth answer in there on the E-meter. In other words, you've got to ask him, is there anything you told me that doesn't apply to this, you see? Or you're trying to say in some diplomatic way, "You told me any lies, bud?" You want to get that off, because they will. But any one of these dwellings upon it is preceded by a basic overt act, which is followed by a withhold and followed by other overt acts. And the individual is keeping himself pinned into this thing by his series of overt acts. He cannot get out of that channel of thought. He'll tell you, I could just give anything, anything, anything. I'd just give anything not to be thinking about the service station. If I could just for 5 minutes not think about the service station and worry about it, you see. You'll actually run into somebody like this sometime or another, you know. If I could just stop thinking about it, you know. I could just go down to the beach or something like that and so forth. And blah, blah, blah. That's a more notable example where the PC is articulating it. Sometimes you merely observe it in the PC, you see. Well, what's the action? Let's get off his actual overts against the service station. His overts withhold from the service station, and ping, just like magic, he stops thinking about it. In other words, all dwellingness on a subject is associated with overts against that subject. You follow that? That's a rule that you can carry around in your hip pocket and feel like you've got it full of diamonds. You won't recognize that you've got diamonds there until you run into this PC who is, he's got present time problem, present time problem, present time problem. He comes to every session, he's got present time problem, he's got present time problem. And it's a present time problem about his domestic affairs, present time problem about his domestic affairs, present time problem about his domestic affairs. So you spend 2 hours or 2.5 hours cleaning up his present time problems about domestic affairs. It should occur to you now to ask, do you spend a lot of time thinking about this outside of auditing? Oh, I don't think about anything else. In other words, he's really not in session. He's just continued his life over into the auditing session. Anybody comes up there with present time problems all the time in an auditing session, he's not free of those things outside the auditing session. And the way for you to cure this is O.W. You run any version of O.W. And we've got lots of systems running O.W. There's some very slippy ones. There's various types and kinds of running O.W. This is quite a subject. And it well merits being a subject, since it is very, very upscale and is of a greater order of magnitude than the reactive bank itself. It is something that is part and parcel of life, which is senior to other types of aberration. Told you something then, didn't I? It's pretty horrible to think of. It is senior in its power, even to GPMs. In other words, you could be totally free of GPMs and still be colliding with the OW sequence. You'd still get the consequences of your overts. Now you can carry it perhaps upstairs in auditing to a point where you no longer have the consequences of your overts. And that undoubtedly is true, but I'm just telling you that there stands, and that's a pretty magnitudinous statement, if just between ourselves, that it's senior to GPMs. So it's always safe to audit OW. It's always indicated to audit OW. And that's one of the things, unfortunately, which auditors do very industriously, but here or there do very badly. They can make a stinking job out of OW, just not to be critical, but just to be factual. It can be the most stinking, dribbling job I ever heard of. They chop up comm cycles, and they do this, and misread meters, and somehow or another, and then you find out, oh, I finally did, I got the overt. What was the overt? Well, the auditor was thinking hostile thoughts about me while I was auditing him. Oh, no. Oh, no. This merely showed bypass charge in the session. He didn't get an overt off. What auditors will sometimes buy as an overt is a matter of grief to me. It really is. I look over auditors' reports, and they've gotten this overt off of this PC. And the PC had been going around all the time, not sending his mother candy. This is an overt act. You know, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
But I don't mean to downgrade you or berate you, but very often some god-awful tacit consent will come into one of these sessions where I don't get my overts off, therefore I won't get them off you, and you don't get them off me, and we'll all sit here and be happy. And you know why they do that? And why they've done that? Because there's some thread of the sociological datum I've just given you running through that session. Ah. So we carried the typhoid fever with us into Scientology. So it's a good thing to know that there's an illness known as you've been wronged. Because it has been the source of great despair to me amongst editors, wondering why in the name of heaven they just couldn't sit down and say, what you done, sister? What you done? And she says, well, I didn't do very much. All right, but how much was it? You know, and just carry it on through in a workmanlike fashion. And that's because wrongitis has entered the session. See? How you've been wronged. This is so much a part of the social world around us that it very easily slips into a session if the auditor is not aware of this fact. So he's inclined to sympathize with the PC, and he thinks it's a very open-hearted, beautiful sentiment on his own part. It's just about as beautiful as a striking rattlesnake. We always knew there was something wrong with this. You'll find it mentioned in the first book. You can only give him sympathy as the lowest level of healing. Well, Moyne, I revise that, man. That's no level of healing. That's a method of strangulation.
You get my point now. You get what I'm talking about here.
If the auditor sits there, see, and he says, the PC, all right, what have you done? Now you're thinking all the time about cat fur. Now what have you ever done to cats, you see? Well, the PC says, well, cats caterwaul outside my window all night long and keep me awake. Good, we've gotten that overt act off. What's going on here? See? The auditor very, very slippily will pick up a motivator for an overt and so forth. You ask somebody is unhappy with their auditor, something of the sort, and somebody will pick him up and you say, look, get his overts off against the auditor. And he sits there and listens to an hour's worth of motivators and says, well, I fixed him up, and now the guy does cave in, see? They think one is being tough, or they're going to be interpreted wrongly in several different ways. The only thing I'm trying to tell you is just this very, very close point is if you carry this, you poor devil, you have been wronged, into a session, you no longer audit the PC at cause. You're auditing the PC at effect, and so the PC will not get better. You buy motivators and sympathize with these motivators of all the horrible things that have happened to the PC in his lifetime. Perfectly all right, you understand, for a PC to tell you how horrible life has been to him. As long as, with not too tactless a change of pace, you get in and find out all the horrible things he's done to life. You've got to recognize that the you are wronged is a disease. You poor fellow, you have been wrong. You poor fellow, you have been wrong. And any time you give somebody this kind of a response of any kind whatsoever, you're contributing to his upset, contributing to his illness, because the only way he'll ever get out of it is return his own causation. Not how he's been wronged. How has he done some wrong to somebody? And as soon as you get the other side of that picture cleaned up, all of a sudden, bing, it's just like magic. You see, nothing can hold on to a thetan.
There is no butterfly net. There is no electronic switchboard. There is nothing can hold on to a Thetan. Nothing. That's the truth of the situation. There's no hobbles. There's no ropes. Nothing can really hold on to a Thetan. It sounds absolutely incredible, but it's true. Well, how come he gets caught? He must have grabbed hold and then forgotten he grabbed hold for him to be trapped thereafter. See, there he is holding on to the stanchion in the bus with a third hand he didn't know he had, and with the other two hands trying to push himself off the bus and wonder how he can't get off the bus. So now he has to conclude that he is trapped on the bus. Nothing can trap him on the bus except his own holding on to the bus. He's got to have hold of it. Now, what is this third hand? The third hand is his overts against the bus. That's how he can't get out of it. That's how he cannot get out of an engram. That's how he can't get out of the bank. This is so on. He himself has overts. It might add up to something that the one where you'll find out to really get somebody out of are the banks he makes himself and has made himself. Oh, man, getting him out of those is rough. Getting him out of an implant, oh, sneeze. They had nothing to get him out of an implant. But how about his own actual GPS? Oh, wow. This is rough, rough. It's easily done today, but it's his own actual GPS that are holding him. Not the ones that were given to him gratuitously. That's something for you to recognize. So you sit down and you tell this PC, you poor fellow, how have you been wronged in life? Good. How else have you been wronged? All right. Now we both recognize you have been wronged. Where do you think he's going to drift? Up or down? He's going to go down in session, man. He can't do anything else because you're auditing him. One, you're auditing him at effect. Two, you are pulling on him the gadget that it's all done to him and he's never done anything. You are confirming this third mysterious hand that is busy holding on to this thing he's so busy worried about and so forth. You're just burying that hand a little bit further because that hand is an overt. That's the overt act. And you're carrying with you the whole sociological impact of life amongst the lowly. How is it a man can never get out of a slum? Well, you'll see this dramatized right straight on up into life in its solid aspects of today. You go down to Chicago, you find out there are various types of slums. Nothing to do with color. You can find white slums that are twice as slummy as any other kind of slums. You say. There's nothing to do with color. You're talking about slums. Well, the dominant aspect which you will find in that slum is how you have been wronged and that nobody can be at cause. The thing is, you can't do anything about it. You look in their windows and you'll find out that Lucky Charms and things like this probably occupy the greatest commerce of the whole place. See? It's all based on some kind of wild luck, like a numbers racket. Or it's based on buy your lucky pixie fish, see, today, and so forth, you know. You can't do anything about it, but maybe some goddess called Lady Luck or something like that nobody has run into lately. Actually, she retired. I forgot to tell them that down in Reno. When they opened up Las Vegas, she retired because she didn't like everything fixed. Anyway, the whole score in that place is you can't do anything about it. Nothing can be done about it. Played hand in glove, counterpoint with how you have been wronged. And we notice that federal governments, which are national governments and so forth, which are notorious for their affinity for the indigent. They just love the indigent. They won't take care of any industrious bloke that's doing a job in the society, but boy, they just love the indigent to a point where they love to make them more indigent, and that is the mechanism they use in their social work. How you have been wronged. This is the yap used by the labor agitator and so forth to the workman. How you have been wronged. Everybody always feels worse after he's talked to one of them, but never can quite figure out why. In other words, it's a black operation. This pure and simple, a black operation. How you have been wrong. So when you sit there and this fellow has actually kicked his sister downstairs and busted her skull in, and you let him get off a fact that his father whipped him. Yes, father whipped me. You don't even say, why did your father whip you? No, but, well, father whipped me, and he was always a brute. Oh, you poor fellow, well, thank you. I guess we've got that straightened out in your life. Now, what else can we find? A teacher was mean to me. You don't say anything about those frogs in the inkwell, see? A teacher was mean to me, and everybody's mean to me. The auditor who sits there and says, yes, we agree, everybody was mean. Yes, we agree, everything is fine. Oh, yes. He's saying at the same time, you weren't at cause, you didn't do anything, it was all purposeless, there is no way you can regulate your fate, life is this way. Okay. Ah, what a corny tune. And that's life amongst the lowly, that's how they keep themselves lowly. That's how they get themselves stuck in. It's a series. It's not hard to understand. It's just a series of overt acts. Naturally, an individual who's guilty of overt acts does not like to be caused in that particular direction because he's held back from reaching in that direction by the fear that he'll perform further overt acts. A thetan is basically afraid of committing overt acts. He doesn't really want to commit overt acts. I don't care what else is arranged anyplace. And as a result, when he does so, he tends to pull them back. He caves himself in, and there he goes. So let's get now. I told you this was a long dissertation to give you this third point. And you can very easily see how this thing could occupy not just a couple, 3 hours of lecture, but four or five sciences all in one fell swoop, such as labor relations and sociology and war against my not getting any votes, poverty. All of these, you could open up this subject. See, this subject becomes a big subject. But let's look at it in just the framework that we're addressing it in, is why can't some students audit, and why can some students audit, and why, more germane, since this is not always at the root of auditing, but you're more germane to the PC, why do some PCs just never get any tonar in action? See? Well, I've given you two sources, and this is the third one. Now, you think I'm going to tell you that they believe they have been wrong and you've got to get their overts off. No, if it were just that simple, I would have found it out a long time ago. But it isn't that simple. Remember, I told you a problem, solutions are as complex as the problem. And this is pretty complex. This person has been so wronged. How a thing can be wrong is pretty hard to do. But this person's been so wronged that they have no longer any concept of an overt. This person cannot really handle the idea of an overt act. And that's what's wrong with that person. Now, the Christian already ran into this in the year Yup Gup. He already ran into this. And he tried to do something about it. He didn't run into this. He had another pitch in mind. But he came down the line saying, repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and you'd better repent. He was pulling an own inversion. He wanted people to invert. He wanted people to admit their guilt. And it's interesting that amongst Middle Western Christians particularly, when you listen to their confessions and so forth at holy roller meetings and so forth, all you hear is a long potpourri of things that they never were courageous enough to do in their whole lives. You could ask any one of them this burning question: are you bragging or confessing? Now, there is the crux of the situation, because they're getting off false overts. In an effort to get off some overts, they feel if they just could say they were guilty enough of something, then somehow or another things would be better. And you've got to safeguard yourself as an auditor against a PC walking into this particular instance, because they will invert and they go kind of mad on this subject. Christianity was trying to put them down a little bit. You're looking for the honest, actual overt. The actual one. And that's what unpins him, because only the truth sets you free. See? It's the actual overt you're looking for. And recognizing that if you don't find it, why, you've committed him to a further progress of being stuck into it. See? Now, what you want to do with this character when you run into him, and he's very frequent, he is not very unnumerous at all. I don't know what he runs, but he certainly must run something like 10-12%. Is you get him to define an overt act. Here's one of the gags. I'll give you a gag. You define an overt act, and then after he's got it all defined, is ask him why it isn't an overt, and he'll tell you right away with the greatest automaticity you have ever heard in your life. He'll go, brrr! Well, an overt act, and he'll give you some sort of an answer and so forth. Well, if I walked out and pushed a little child in the road and pushed her underneath an automobile and so forth, that would be an overt act. That's an overt act. It's an act of harmfulness against some other person. And if you weren't alert, you could be pretty knuckleheaded about this and let it go at that and say, we've got that licked, because you haven't asked the little gee-whizzer that comes around the back door. You're just going to have your eyeballs snapped out about an inch and back into your skull a few times when you work this on your PC sometime in the future. You're going to really be upset, even though the PC knew the gimmick. I mean, you can't get around it. All right, you push this child out in the street, and it's all right, very good. Now, why isn't that an overt act? You'll have immediate, instant explanation of why it isn't an overt act. And they don't think they can commit an overt act. Well, how are you going to get an overt act off if the person can't commit an overt act? They've committed overt acts, but they haven't committed any overt acts, so the net result of all this is they stay pinned into it tight, because there's no reality on this as an overt act at all. Then you've got to find something searchingly that they do really consider an overt, that would really be an overt act. It may be something very mild. The old effect scale tells you that it'd be something very mild on such a person. They've done something or failed to do something, and that was an overt act. And now you've got a real honest-to-goodness overt act, and it might be so petty and so nothing that you'd hardly categorize this as an overt act. But it's actually real to this person, because they can't answer this question, why isn't that an overt act? But it is an overt act, and sit there and look rather grievy about the situation, see? Didn't praise their mother's cakes. Of course, we also know that they knocked their mother down the cellar steps and broke her leg. But that wasn't an overt act, see? But didn't praise mother's cakes, and that was the overt act, see? But that's a real overt act to the person. Now, you can go up on a gradient scale like that. There are numerous ways of tackling this. I'm not even trying to give you the whole embrace of how you tackle this problem. It's wide. Numerous ways you can handle this situation if you know the situation exists. How do you walk upstairs on this thing? The individual could get off some overt acts, but he wouldn't get any tone arm action, and they're not real to him. Yeah, he didn't do anything. You ask him how it isn't an overt act on a discussion basis, but not a processing basis. That's not a process. And he'll give you some very good reasons why it isn't an overt act. You know right away that you haven't got how this is an overt act. Well, that's that discussion level. And that's a cross-check of one kind or another, which is left to your cleverness to walk around and straighten up, see?
Well, how do you finally do something about this? Well, there are probably numerous ways that something could be done about this. Fred here the other day was running. A person had found a real overt act. A real overt act. They really considered a real overt act. And then Fred audited his justifications for having committed it. And as did all the person's justifications for having committed it, like an R1 type of approach, don't you see? Use justifications, got the justifications off. Well, the thing would be getting realer and realer and realer. Unburden it, in other words. See, that was a very clever method of approach. Now, here's a wide avenue of what do you do in order to bring about the reality of this. Now, it's no good to stand there and try to convince the fellow how serious it is, because that's why he isn't saying it isn't overt, because he's so convinced it is so serious that he can't confront it. You find, if you went to a prison, for instance, to process some blokes in a prison, one of the wildest things you'd run into is the fact that nobody there has ever committed a crime. That'd be the most astonishing thing to you. Also, how sorry they are for each other, that would also be a little astonishing, unless you remember what I've told you here. And also, how they've all been wronged, or how society has wronged them. Let's look at where they are. They're in prison. Well, how come they're staying there? You see, you can't put a thetan in prison. Unless he's committed an overt act. Only then, the overt act actually would have to be against the prison, or the people who are holding him in prison, or prisons in general, or metal, or bars, or block buildings, or something like that. Otherwise, you couldn't keep him in the place for a minute, you see. So what is this? How would you sort this out? Therefore, the criminal must be a very serious problem to the society, because they lock him up all the time. But maybe he's a more serious problem to the criminal because he gets himself locked up all the time. How does he get locked up all the time? Well, he commits overt acts all the time. I'm afraid this isn't a planned idea at all. I'm afraid this is totally reactive as far as life is concerned. Person commits overt acts while he locks himself up. The criminals that go around and ask to be caught alone accounts for the record of the FBI. Nothing else could account for it. So there's the overt act motivator sequence. There it starts operating. This doesn't mean now that everybody is guilty and everybody is this and everybody is that and everybody should be shot down in flames because they are this way. They have forgotten how to let themselves out of the trap. They've forgotten how to let themselves out of the trap. They don't know where the door is anymore. They're walking around in circles here. And they just happily get out of the trap as anybody else. But they've lost the key and they've lost the door, and that's it. And that's the state you find him in. No reason standing around saying, well, it's your own fault. You lost the key and you lost the door, so I guess you're locked up and there you are. No particular point in adopting that particular attitude either. Because that in itself is an overt too, isn't it? Thank you.